It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I've noticed.
Episode number 6. As always, I am joined with Ringo.
Hello, how do you do?
And we have a very special guest, Geofax.
How are you guys?
Before we get into anything, can you explain your name, Geofax? Because I don't understand it.
I don't either, so.
Okay. So... we're going to have to go back a while, back to the days of Barjo and Junlist for you good game fans.
Wow.
Whoa.
So, it was probably 2007, and my family had bought a PlayStation 3, and it was time to get onto PlayStation Online and sort of hang around with people in the Uncharted 2 multiplayer. Of course, you needed a nickname, and back then, I didn't have one. I didn't have a nickname, I didn't play online, so I started coming up with things, and I'm like, I want it to be something cool, something edgy, so it's got to have two X's. I want it to be, what's X? Fax! What else? Ooh. And then I thought, because I'm somewhat indulgent in British culture and whatnot, it has to be Lord. It's Lord something facts, and eventually I settled on Geo. So it was Lord Geofax, and I had a number after it, but as the years have sort of passed on, I've shrunken it down and shortened it to lovely, succinct Geofax.
How did you get Geo out of that? I can get facts, you know, with two X's, three's too erotic for you, I get that. But where does the Geo? How do you come up with the Geo part of your name? That's...
I was one of those kids that excelled at learning, and they ran out of spelling lists for me. So I started looking in dictionaries.
One of those kids, yeah.
Yeah, I know what a mucopolysaccharide is, and I still know how to spell it to this day, and I learnt that word probably 8 years ago, so... For those who don't know what that is, it's a type of sugar. In fact, it's synthetic sugar.
Yeah, I had to learn that for university. That was no benefit to me whatsoever.
But yeah, Geo just popped out of nowhere, so filled my head with words, and there it was.
There you go, fair enough. Much more, how do I put it, in depth of like an origin of a nickname comparison to like me and George.
Hello.
I still love the fact that you just stuck that name.
You call me at every chance you get. I can't really avoid it, so it's just I'm stuck with it now. It's G Cap to everybody else but you. It's Ringo to you, and
it's
the
Ringo,
podcast now. So you know.
Yeah.
Who is this George? I only see Ringo. Who is this George?
I was never George. I'm Ringo now and forever.
Ringo of the Jungle.
God damn it. I almost forgot that movie existed. Thanks, Nick.
Don't worry about it. Alright, I may as well ask, how has everyone's Christmas been?
Yeah, pretty good.
Hot. Very hot.
Yes, very hot.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Did you guys get anything good? That's the important part of Christmas. It's a presence. It's the material part.
Are we talking about what we got from people or what we got for ourselves? Because those are two different things.
Yes, two different things.
Either.
Well, do you want to start, GFX?
All right. I got a sandwich press. so that was pretty sweet. Big lover of the toasted sandwich.
You're the second person I know who got that. That's just, oh. I can't believe it. It's that common this year, but anyway.
Good old.
2016, year of the sandwich
place. Hallelujah!
Got any something redeeming out of this year?
I actually didn't get that much in terms of stuff. I got a few coupons, but I decided to treat myself in the form of Giftmas and buy Rise of the Tomb Raider 20-year anniversary edition for PlayStation 4.
Have you touched it, the game?
I have not had access to a PlayStation for nearly a week now, and the withdrawal's setting in.
it's like a drug addiction yeah. for you.
Sorry.
Gonna start playing emulators to get the same experience.
Oh yeah, I've got Dolphin, and I'm it's doing it, but not enough.
Fair enough. So anything else, GFX, before we move on to Ringo?
In terms of Christmas, particularly nope. Nothing PG friendly, so we'll just keep it that way.
Hey. Who's, it's okay. Who said this show is PG friendly?
Like, yeah. Come on.
Have you not been paying attention to our podcast?
What crap idea was to make this show PG? Because I don't remember it ever being PG.
Let me remind the viewers and listeners that one of us is not an adult here.
Yeah, Nickname is quite a youngster, and we try to be really PG to G around him.
Yeah.
I mean, if you see me without facial hair, I look like I'm 10, so...
I am 10, for the people who don't know.
We're all children at heart, so it doesn't matter.
Pretty much. But Nickname's a real underage over here.
Age is just a number, you know what I mean?
Yep.
It's all about the experience, you know? Experience that you gain.
Mm. But yeah, I think I found Ringo.
Alright, so this isn't counted as Christmas, but a week before Christmas, I bought myself a PlayStation 4, which I have not regretted since, for reasons that I'll say shortly.
And yet you still haven't got Rocket League.
No, I haven't, because I just don't see a point. There's no one that I know on PS4 who plays that. So haven't really seen a point. Because I work at a toy store, and that is extremely busy at this time of year, I actually earned the money back that I paid for the PS4 in 2 weeks. Or less. So that was like, okay, awesome. So I got myself Uncharted 1 to 4. I also got myself with Witcher 3, which I said I'd play after I finished Uncharted. And as well as that, I got a bunch of books, including 2 Doctor Who ones, which I found very interesting. And it's called...
Do you have a name for them?
It's The Hooniverse, The Untold History of Space and Time, and Who Graphica, which is just this really beautifully designed...
Those are two quite recent ones.
They are, yeah. My cousins know that I like Doctor Who, which I haven't made obvious, but obviously not. I also got this really good director's book, as well as a t-shirt that says, I'm the director, that's why, which I plan to wear every time I do filming ever. So Connor, get ready for that. And a hat that is currently shipping. But apart from that, knickknacks and stuff, that's it. Yeah.
Fair enough.
How about you, Nickname?
Well, before I go to Christmas, I was very excited. I got to go watch cricket. As boring as that sounds, it's actually the non-boring cricket.
Oh, okay, interesting. All right.
it's one that only lasts 4 hours. So it's only 4 hours of your life you're going to waste instead of an entire day or 5 days. So, in a way, that's kind of nice. And I just got bombarded with crap when I went to watch the cricket. Like, most of the time, you normally pay for your merchandise. For me, I got all the merchandise I needed within, like, 2 minutes, and I paid nothing for it.
Nice.
So that's always nice. I went to see Rogue One yesterday. Kind of... It's weird because when we recorded this, Carrie Fisher, unfortunately, passed away... earlier today, so it's weird coincidence, but I don't know how to explain it. It's like the universe is screwing with me.
It's screwing with everybody, every single person. Just anyway, continue.
It's just timing of it, you know. Literally within 24 hours of watching the movie,
and with that ending as well. We're not going to say what it is, but with that ending,
it's just I don't know. It's just bad timing, I guess.
Terrible timing.
We'll probably talk about Rogue One next year at some point.
Mm.
But Christmas. I didn't get too much exciting stuff. I did get a brand new phone. That was always beneficial. Because the phone I used to have is just a slide phone. The one I got... But the problem was it had only 2G on it and had, like, really shit memory. So I got a touch screen phone that has 3G and, like, 8 times more memory. So I'm really happy with that. Still trying to get used to it, though, because the comparison of size, it's, like, 3 times the size of my other phone. So it's just... Yeah, it's weird fitting in my pocket because I always get paranoid it's going to fall out and... Yeah, stuff like that. But, I got the 12th Dr. Sonic screwdriver. That was one of the really exciting things I got. Because I didn't expect it. That's the problem. I did expect it. Like, I'd always seen it. And I was like, well, if it comes down in price, I'll probably get it. Because I got the 10th and the 11th, so getting the 12th makes sense. But they were always, like, $30-something. I'm like, I don't know... But yeah, getting that for Christmas means I don't have to worry about that anymore. Lovely.
<All right. laughs> There's a unique fascination with it. Like, every time I'm sort of in my room and I see it, play about with it for like 2 minutes and then go about my day.
Now I have to do it.
It's great to fondle with.
Out of context, that this would be a solid R show, but thank God it's a Sonic screwdriver.
Not in any way... It could be deemed as a euphemism for anything. But yeah, I got Deadpool on DVD, Finding Dory on DVD, and I got a 3DS case that's in the Legend of Zelda satchel, which it was total shock, and I put my 3DS in it, and just it looks so it's so good. just to carry it around.
I have a question about Deadpool. Just to backtrack like 10 seconds. So yes. CinemaSins finally released the. Everything Wrong with Deadpool.
I know. Now, look. I was so happy.
The majority, I was like, this is fucking amazing. But then the part at the end, when they just took back everything for what, like, when... I love that so much. You haven't...
I haven't seen it. Damn it.
Oh.
You have not seen Everything Wrong with Deadpool. Really?
I'm so sorry,
Jim.
It only comes out today.
It only comes out on Wednesdays.
It came out... Yeah, it came out... 7 o'clock this morning, I think it was.
Yeah, I've been at work for most of today, and I've been moving out and everything.
Plot twist, I lied. That was all a lie.
Yeah.
You can ignore everything I said. That was a complete lie.
Yeah.
So you have nothing to worry about.
No spoilers there whatsoever.
I tricked you, because I knew you hadn't seen it. So there you go. Crisis averted, everybody. It's all good. Anyway, continue, Nick.
That was my Christmas, very relaxed, and I really like that, because most Christmases are always very hectic, like, we got to get up at, like, 7 o'clock, and got to bake stuff for lunch, my relative's house, we normally bake lunch for them, but because we didn't go there this year, I basically woke up at, like, 10 o'clock, I opened my presents about 1, and then I went off to my other relative's house at 4 o'clock. So, yeah, it wasn't as rushed, and I really, really enjoyed that. So, yeah, that's my Christmas.
That's pretty good. Mine was really similar, just relaxing at family. So, yeah.
There are fireworks being shot out.
That's what I thought I heard, but I just tried to just. Continue it.
All right, hang on. I'm going to close this. Keep talking, but I'm going to close this window because if there's a gunshot, it's going to get really, really bad.
So, words. Gio, how was your actual Christmas? How was it? Was it like a relaxing Christmas?
My sentiments about Christmas are much less merry than the next man. I am not very fond of it, to be honest.
That's perfectly fine.
Like, the gift-giving aspect is... I suppose nice, but when you reach your 20th year of unwrapping presents, it's kind of like, I don't know. And working in a supermarket store, you really see the consumerist side, and you see a lot of the advertising the show of selling everything for Christmas, all the festive biscuits to the festive wrapping paper or to the goddamn watermelons that have a little Santa bow around them. There's just a lot to take in, and after a while it becomes really draining. So Christmas, I'm not as interested in revisiting as the other people.
Is that it for Christmas talk?
I guess so. Do you want to head right into the news then?
Yep.
Alright, so we have only one major bit of news, and shockingly, it's not Doctor Who related, because why talk about Doctor Who in a Doctor Who podcast? I don't know. But, it's to do with Sherlock, so...
Sorry.
So there was a Q&A, for Sherlock, where, Moffat and, Gatiss answered, and I say that with big giant quotation marks, questions from fans of Sherlock. In regards to, one question... whether they were completely against the idea of Sherlock and John having a relationship. Gatiss responded, "Of course we're not against it, but as we have explained many times, that's not the story that we wanted to tell. Obviously, as a gay man myself, I have no problem with the notion that a Sherlock Holmes and a Dr. Watson could be in a relationship together, but ours aren't. It's as simple as that. Sherlock is clearly capable of feeling emotion and of falling for someone, but that someone is not John Watson, despite his love and great affection for him." So
that is the most professional way to answer the whole Sherlock Watson together fangirl screaming. So, props to him.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the question you're going to ask is, what was the "I love you" comment then?
Yeah.
Which they actually do address it. Gatiss responded that. It was directed towards his mum, obviously. He doesn't ring home often enough and usually forgets her birthday. He's a very naughty boy. So, I don't know whether he's bullshitting or not,
but I guess
like we'll find out.
But it also sounds like he's being, like... It's weird. It sounds like it could be one or the other. But, yeah. You know, we'll have to wait and see.
He also revealed that there can be anything between 8 and 10 drafts of a Sherlock script.
Whoa.
And that the pair have joked about doing a black and white episode set in the 1940s where they fight the Nazis. And now I really want this to happen.
I really don't. And do, like, for reasons that I'm just really curious, but I also don't want them to ruin a really great streak of Sherlock episodes. But, you know, whatever.
I just love the idea of seeing them tackle the Nazis. That's like...
They can pull it off, like, no doubt.
It's like Sherlock in Victorian London, Sherlock fights the Nazis, Sherlock goes to space. That's the steady progression of ridiculousness that this show can go. So we're like, we can be almost halfway there, you know? But let's be honest, like, Sherlock in space would be a hilarious aspect. You know, like, he's got to fight crime on the moon.
He's got to find out why the aliens stole the cheese.
And then that's how Hulock can happen. Hey, there we go.
Oh, boy.
Just make the Doctor appear out of the TARDIS on the moon. I was like, sorry, that was kind of my fault. And then that was the end of the episode. Very short one, but yeah, what was that?
I was going to say, have you seen the Hulock fan trailer by John Smith?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I...
Yep.
Yes, I love John Smith's work. He's some of the effects he does is just so good. Like, I especially love his breakdowns, even probably more so than his actual videos. Because I love seeing how he layers the visuals and puts the... Because with anything fan-related, yeah, you kind of have to make sure that it's still... feels like the main show.
Yep.
And I think that whenever John Smith does it, he really puts great detail towards it. Like, one of the other ones that I love from him is Rain, where you just see Capaldi come out of the out of his TARDIS and it's raining and he's on this like lake and it's like reflective on the bottom. It's so beautiful. There's like no dialogue, but it's just from a visual point of view, it's just fantastic to look at. And yeah.
Fun fact: I actually used the music from that bit in a Thing of the Day for Good Game spin-off show Pocket.
Oh, nice!
For a Thing of the Day intro, I believe it was the. Oh, it would have been November 7th, I think it was on, or something like that, but it was when the main hosts were away, so, yeah.
Right, right, yeah, yep, that makes sense. Yeah. Well, hang on, I may as well, since you've segued into Pocket, all three of us have been in some way indirectly involved in Skipperino. I'm the script editor. Ringo, you basically wrote the entire thing.
Hello.
And and GFX, you're the main actor.
Indeed.
So I haven't because entirely different states. How has it been on set? Because I've seen photos, but
awful.
Obviously,
it's just so awful. I can barely work 5 minutes without Ringo coming and asking me to do some somersault or something to try and parkour over a fence. The set, it's a real trial for the sound guys as well, because they're having to chase after me, you know, and they're trying to lumber over the fence at the same time, and I'm trying to spout some dialogue. You know, pineapple gets thrown across. It's just so intricate and so needlessly
complex. You love the pineapple
complex.
Line, come on.
I loved it.
Jack pulled it off so well. Oh.
It's actually been a real joy. Like, I find quite a lot of fun in doing it, and I like the atmosphere that's on set. I mean, we do get a little bit giddish from time to time and sort of get a bit distracted, but, you know, George is there to straighten us out and make sure the film's actually getting done. You know, we've had great actors come in, like Icy Mindracer, for those in the Rocket League community, has been on set, and she's a joy to work with, and we've had a lovely actor called, by the name of Jack O'Brien, very professional, very interesting man, and he adds a sort of eccentricism that I don't think I could ever find anywhere else, and I love it for that.
He's really good. But look, I think the real
good
hero.
Good job sucking up to your boss, though. I really appreciate you sucking up. You know, get your extra brownie points for when
to be fair,
the next
to be frank,
thing happens.
I have asked Connor to do some things like, you know, running and bike riding, which didn't actually happen, but.
Yeah, hang on, can you explain the bike riding thing? Because I was a script editor, but I wanted
I
to know
want
what, like,
to
what actually
it.
Happened. Yeah, explain what happened, because I don't...
Yeah, what happened to the scene, or what happens in the scene?
No, what happened to...
What happened to the scene.
Okay.
To the scene.
So, I'm a big person. I'm about 6'4" in real life, so people have not met me. I also...
He's really tall.
I also weigh about 120 kilos, so I'm quite heavy, and I was overweight for quite a portion of my life. So I never really felt safe riding a bike. So I rode with training wheels when I was young, and when it came time to sort of progress and go forward, I felt quite vulnerable and quite humiliated because I could never quite keep my balance. So I never really learned how to ride a bike. And I'd probably say it would have been in the second to third last draft of the script. It was the full draft, but like it was the full script, but not its final iteration. And George tells me that there's a scene where he needs me to ride a bike. I'm like, okay.
Out of all the things I came to do, I can't, like, obviously I didn't know, but I cannot believe that's the one thing I chose. Like,
yeah.
He can run, skip, hop, jump, but I chose bike. And, oh boy.
Could you try bungee jump? I mean, you could have tried to compromise there, you know?
Oh, yeah, I would have been able to bungee jump. I mean, I've got a thing, like, I'm afraid of heights, but I can knock that aside, but I'm not quite as physically able. So, it was, yeah, it became a thing for me to sort of keep learning how to ride a bike, and I reckon probably 2 more weeks of hard work, and I would have been able to take off, but I never quite got there, and it came time to shoot the scene, and it was literally the week before the scene, and George sort of sends me a message like, hey, are you able to ride a bike now? And it's like, can we do this on foot? So, a lot of running that day.
There was a lot.
Fair enough.
And I have to give a big commendation to Connor, not only for the constant running, but he has been awesome. He's never been like the non-actors in our group who have been distracted at times. Connor's always been on point, to the point where, and now there's a picture in the chat, to the point where he duct taped the page of a script onto his body so that Icy could read off of it, as she had forgotten, I think it was 1 or 2 lines.
Right.
So yeah. that dedication you do not find with barely anyone else. So I'm going to say, he's a legendary actor and dedicated person.
Have you read the entirety of the script? Just curious to know.
Have I?
Yes, have you?
The main actor.
Yeah, no, I've read the entirety of the script about 10 times.
Okay, because I remember, like, when it was, I don't know, the second day of the shooting, and I asked you if you read the entire script, and you was like, oh no, I'd only read this amount. I'm just thinking to myself, come on, why have you not read the entire script yet?
No, there was, it's like, there's Jack, and there's Nikki, and that guy, they need a little encouragement sometimes, but no, they are actually very good actors, and they run pretty well with the fly, so they're going to do well if they ever have a director that changes their mind midway through a scene. So, yeah.
Yep. So, how much have you guys got left to do in regards to the making of the movie?
I want
to
say we're about... looking over the script real quick, we definitely got over halfway done, I'd say. And hopefully, in a weekend, or not even a weekend, in like two or three days, we'll hopefully have it all done, hoping for a mid to late January release date for this project, which should be exciting.
One final question in regards to this before we talk about the return of Dr. Mysterio. The best part and the worst part on working on the set of the movie.
Do you want to...
Ringo, you can take this one first.
The best part?
Yep.
Well, do you mean, like, for me personally? Because for me, it's when I press the record button. Because it's like, it's so surreal actually doing this. This is the biggest thing I've ever... This is the biggest project I've ever done. So I think just being there, having all these people helping out, whether it's with sound or lighting or acting, and this having that, just watching what's happening through the viewfinder or through the LCD screen, and seeing the actual thing happen real time is just my favourite part about it. Now my least is probably the occasional, the not Connor, not Nikki, not Jack, the people who aren't, you know, who are volunteers, which is fair enough. The occasional, we're a bit distracted, we're too tired, obviously that's okay. But that's probably my least favourite part about it, but it rarely happens, so it's okay.
Right,
and yeah, that's it for me. Yep, Connor?
My favourite part, and about acting generally, but is just being on the set and being there doing the scene work, because the atmosphere and the ability to sort of change into this new character is the most fun I have with it. You know, I get to be Detective Jack Dunsbridge. I get to sort of be this... I mean, he looks quite young, but he's a slightly grizzled man. He sort of hates life a little bit. The only way he finds his passion is to sort of pursue his detective work, and I'm pursuing him as an actor. So being there with everyone is my favourite bit. As for least... I would probably have to go with the traveling. because I don't actually own a car at the moment, so I can't get to A and B very quickly. So there's often times where I'll sit down and I'll be riding a train or a bus, be an hour to an hour and a half of travel to get to a place and sort of sitting there reading through the script. I'm usually the first one there just because of my need for punctuality. So I'm sort of like waiting for everyone to show up. And then once we're all there, you know, it really sort of gets the ball rolling and everything's much more enjoyable.
I have to hire a taxi or a limo. Like, not an official one. Like I'll get my... I'll have to hire someone to, like, transport you out. Because I don't want you to be... to be, you know, stressed out ever about travel, because you are the main man.
When I'm working at Marvel or something, we can talk about limo arrangements.
I have to cater for your needs, no matter how big or how small the budget is of this.
Oh yeah, do you get like a trailer or something like that, or just?
You know? I make fair use of George. I make fair use of one of the locations on set down near St. Kilda. I like to make use of that kitchen and everything, you know, mug, cup of tea, it's all good.
Because we've had 3 days of shooting three different locations, so it's been, you know, pretty interesting to have to, like, you know, hey, welcome to this new place, alright, let's get going. You know, there's not a lot of time to just have a little tour, mostly because the locations haven't been huge, but I think it's been pretty good.
I know there's one scene, I don't really want to spoil too much, but when you're in an office building, when I got shots of that, I'm like, how did you pull that off?
This is not a recommended thing, I don't think.
George is very connected.
No. When I write my script, every scene that I write, I'm like, okay, can I get the location? Because location is so much more than people think sometimes, including myself.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, alright, let's see. My dad works at a bank. I'm not going to be allowed to film there. Next. My mom works in an office. Now, hold up. This can work because she's in charge of what she does, so I'm allowed to film there. Let's weave this into this somehow. So when I had a chief in my story, I'm like, well, let's go to his office. I have the location. I have the motive for the scene. So there's that. And it just worked out that there was no one there that day because it was a weekend. So, thank God for that. We got everything done without any distractions, which was good.
Very nice. All right. Anything you want to tease, like in regards to Skip Brandon, before we move on to Doctor Who?
No.
No.
No. I mean, I hope they get a very short teaser trailer out. But apart from that, you guys have got to go in blind. Yeah, that is all.
That's always the best way to go in blind a lot of the time.
Trailers, like, fun story, just quick little story. I did a media project where I had to make a trailer, alright? And I didn't get full marks because I quote, now, I love my teacher, she's a really great media teacher, but what I didn't like is how she said, your trailer didn't tell a lot of story, so I had to mark it down. It didn't show a lot of what was going to happen. And I'm like, in my head, that's what I hate about trailers, how much they show. Like, in my trailer that I did, I teased about the villain, the plot, but I didn't really go into detail, which is what obviously in the future I might not have control of that, but I just can't stand trailers that just, like, for people who want to watch Castaway, never watch that trailer. Never. That is my top of my list. That trailer spoils the entire goddamn movie to the bone. Oh. Do not watch that trailer, for the love of God.
Or Terminator Genesis.
Oh my God. Anyway, that's my trailer rant over.
Although, technically, let's be honest, by watching the trailer, you've saved yourself like an hour and a half of time that you could spend doing better things.
Yeah.
So in a way, go watch the teaser trailer. Go watch the trailer for Terminator Genesis, and don't watch one for Castaway because that's actually a pretty good movie. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
All right.
All right. Let's go into the Return of Dr. Mysterio. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
So much to talk about.
I've written the most for this than I've written for any of the class episodes. And
totally.
Because
same.
Class is class. But this was just... Anyway, go ahead.
There was just so much to talk about in this episode. That's the thing. That's what excited me the most. Do you guys want to go positives? Go one positive each until we run out of all positives? Happy with that?
Yeah, sounds good.
Why not?
Alright, so for me, the very first thing I liked, straight away, the very first shot you get is this comic book style visual. Because that set the tone, in my opinion, very brilliantly. And then this idea gets carried into the episode where you have this really funny conversation of Lucy and the ghost on the phone. You know, because the visuals there, though comic related, they kind of remind me of Hulk. You know, that Ang Lee movie that no one really liked? The one with Eric Banner in it?
Yep.
The visuals, like how they did multiple people on the same screen, definitely reminded me of that movie. And in saying that, that was probably one of my favorite parts of Hulk, was how they still try to keep the comic book feel in the movie itself. So I thought that was really good directing work on Ed Begett's part. I'm still calling him Ed Begett. It's just so much. It's so fun to say his name like that. So yeah, that's my very first point. Who's up next?
Ringo.
Okay. Now, that was one of my points, but I'm obviously not going to double up on things. Now, my first act, my second point on this, like without, is just Peter Capaldi. That's all I've written, because, like, it's just. Now, obviously, you guys have to double up on this, because every time, from his introductory scene, every time I saw him in this episode, I'm like, this man was born to play him. And I actually said those words while I was watching the episode. It's just, he's just so good at playing him, he just gets into the role, and just, I can't really talk bad about Capaldi at all. He was amazing in this episode, as always, and I just need to see him back. Even if it's just a one-off thing, so.
Well, that's the thing with Capaldi, is that he had the really shaky. He wasn't bad in Series 8, but he was definitely still trying to find his feet.
Mm.
Series 9, he got more comfortable. Series 10, he knows what he's doing. He can act the Doctor, no problems.
He could just get into it instantly.
This episode proves it.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Is that your only point?
That was my first main point. Just everything about. It was just every time I saw him, and like the scene where he's just eating the sushi with, and then I think it was sushi, and then Lucy just comes around. He's sitting there just eating sushi. I'm like no one else. Like, would laugh. Like, I couldn't laugh that hard if Capaldi just I just lost it at that thing. Anyway, that's my main point. Just Capaldi. That's my first point. Yep. All right,
Connor.
Interesting you said Capaldi, because I was going to say Nardole was a pleasant return. Like, Matt Lucas in The Husbands of River Song, I really enjoyed Matt Lucas's character. It was sort of like a light, but slightly, I don't want to say low life, but he obviously wasn't very high in terms of status, and sort of, you know, he's very relatable. To see him return, I was very pleased, and I liked the sort of levity and down-to-earth nature he brought. You know, the Doctor pinpointing, saying, look, these are all capital cities. And now he's like, well, New York's not a capital city. It's like, look, they got one from Washington.
That actually makes sense later on, yeah.
Yeah, in terms of the story, yeah. But it's just like, his sort of ability to step back while the Doctor does his charade and everything, that's really nice. The companion for me is always the most important element, because that's how you see through to what the Doctor is. But yeah.
Well, that's a weird thing. Nardole didn't really feel like the companion, because he was kind of like on even footing.
Yeah.
Mm. Like he would chat. Those two, like, I want to say banter, but that's basically what it was. Those two. And this is what I'm saying. This is one of my points. They played off each other so well in this episode. Here. Like. In comparison to Husbands, River Song, Nardole was much more toned down in regards to the goofiness, which, I have to admit, it was a bit jarring at first, because, you know, you have the immediate contrast of not personality, but just how the character was approached, but it was definitely for the better, and it definitely reminded me of how R2-D approached Donna, and how basically everyone hated her in that in The Runaway Bride because she was so shouty and annoying. But then when she got reintroduced in Partners in Crime, she was much more toned down. I mean, you still had the... She didn't feel like it was a different person, but you definitely liked her a lot more when she was on screen. And that definitely came across here with Nardole. But yeah, the thing with the interaction between Nardole and the Doctor is that Nardole had some of the best lines of this episode.
Yep.
And that amazed me. Like, one of my favourites is, where is it? When Lucy asks what Nardole and the Doctor are doing in her apartment, his response is like, "We could ask you the same question, but it's your apartment, so you probably won't."
Love that line.
The deadpan delivery of that is what made that line work so well. But then you have stuff like just the Doctor and Nardole casually drinking tea while they're pinpointing the ship in orbit. You had when Nardole comments that the Tokyo branch was empty. The Doctor comments he made a distraction by flooding downstairs with Pokemon. That was a great delivery. But the thing I liked the most about that one in particular is that one of two things have resulted from this. Either Pokemon Go exists in the Hooniverse, or actual Pokemon do. And either way, I love the fact that that's a thing. Just the fact... Could you imagine, though, if, like, Pikachu was an actual thing that existed in the Hooniverse? Just, like, an actual Pikachu? I don't know.
You'd have to go into the whole sort of debate about whether or not it's an alien creature, since it's a sci-fi show, you know. You'd be wondering. Many, many questions would arise. I mean, they already started talking about Spider-Man and Superman and everything. I think they just took the opportunity to have a more... a less frivolous in spending budget, like on sets and whatnot, and sort of go out and get some name brands of stuff. So, yeah.
Well, name dropping is fine. I mean, people do it all the time in like movies and stuff. Just name drop something, and instantly it gets cred for acknowledging it. And the Nintendo fanboy in me, obviously loved that line quite a lot, just because Pokemon. You know, what's not to like? But there was another part with Nardole and the Doctor when so you guys know when the scene where they're in the TARDIS and the Doctor is annoyed at Grant for using his powers when he promised he wouldn't,
yeah.
And then Nardole, it's just like you're not any better. You use your powers despite going completely against the Time Lord code of not interfering, and it's just. I don't know. I just love the dynamic between those two. They were definitely, there was definitely more interesting to see play out than it was in, Husbands. I feel like I definitely stole your point then.
it's alright. We're all here to talk about Doctor Who, so.
I noticed, and I'm still sticking with the Nardole thing, I liked the little hints they made in regards to what happened between Husbands and Mr. Mysterio.
Yeah.
Where, they acknowledge that the reason why he's been away for an entire year is because he's been hanging out for the 24 years in Deryllium. I thought that was a nice thing to talk about. The fact that Nardole was cut out of Hydroflask to prevent the Doctor from being lonely after losing River. Just little hints. They didn't go into depth, and we knew this because when he was talking about stuff about the Christmas special, he did say that they wouldn't really go into it. But I feel like we got enough out of it to at least, I don't know, have a good understanding of what happened between the two episodes.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I definitely think. If we're going to talk about dynamics, the one we definitely have to talk about is Grant and Lucy. Those yep. two were just so adorable to see play out on screen. Like, you instantly believed in their chemistry. And I had concerns because Justin Chatwin, Dragon Ball Evolution, I made that very clear. I was very concerned. But those two are just... It's just so wonderful to see. And I think Charity Wakefield, man, she performed the shit out of this episode as Lucy Fletcher. But, yeah, just... Again, the dynamic between them was just so good. It didn't feel rushed. And with any romance that is in such a short amount of time, that can be a problem because you don't have time to flesh out the characters. But because they were the main big point of this episode,
yep,
it was done quite well, and I was really happy with that. I'm just looking at some of the lines that those two had, like... when Lucy is talking to Grant about the fact that he looks wet, he responds with, "I prefer mild-mannered." And she seems seemingly okay with that as a response. also, when she's when Lucy's talking to the ghost, that she understands that he wants to retain some privacy, he responds, "Was it the mask that tipped you off?" it's just beautiful. This is a lot of what I loved about this episode. The dialogue is so funny.
Especially, I found Lucy and the Doctor, like, the way she spoke to him was like,
yes.
I could see her being a companion at some point. Like, she was hilarious, especially when she's, you know, she was interviewing the Doctor and, you know, doing all that as a reporter. Oh, she was a standout for me in this episode.
All right, next point, guys. What do you think? So I don't butt in again.
Let's see. Oh, one little thing that I had was when we first got introduced to Capaldi. I loved how he was basically doing, like, superhero sins, like, in this for, like, a short time. I thought that was just really enjoyable. Like, about how they, what was it, Clark Kent and Superman look the same, and then when the kid's like, everyone knows that. And he's like, but Lois Lane's a reporter. And I'm like, these questions are some of the things he said I've asked. And I thought, It's not really a positive, just a side comment. I just really enjoyed some of the stuff he said.
Yeah.
But, yeah, most of my points about the characters, which we just talked about, like Lucy and Grant, I was really skeptical about them, but they turned out to be believable, and the dialogue and the dynamic. But apart from that, they're my main points for the characters.
So the thing I noticed, right, was I definitely took a different approach. So the first time I was looking at it very story-based, you know, and I was like, I've kind of seen this stuff before. But then the second time round, I looked at it like a character piece.
Exactly the same here.
And this is where it really does become a really good episode. I mean, the story is very...
The story is probably my own negative. That. Yeah.
But, in regards to the characters and how they the dynamic between all of them, they were all really well fleshed out, mm-hmm. So I definitely enjoyed that, and I feel like that took away from a lot of the main things I didn't like about the story itself, so, yeah.
Can I just add, one of the nice little touches I liked about the start of the episode was how the Doctor's building something on his roof, and I really like how he sort of, you know, brings normal earthly elements and then mishmashes them up to form some sort of detector or some device, some, you know, thing of the week. And I liked how it was sort of in reference to his previous, you know, transgressions in New York, how he's trying to fix it.
Oh my god, yes. Continuity in this episode was so funny. Yeah. Like, just, I realized this, like, three different parts of the episode were like, that's a nice nice reference to past episodes. As you're talking about, like, the fact about the whole paradoxes, and he's trying to not have the time distortion there anymore, as you're talking about with the machine. That thing about the switches, and he's like, oh, I love buttons and switches. And that instantly reminded me of the Chris's Invasion, where he's like, he loved pushing that big red button. And Hyde, where he loved playing with the toggle switches. I was like, that's really nice continuity. And I didn't notice it at first, but when I rewatched it, I'm like, oh yeah, that's a reference to this episode, and that's a reference to that episode.
Yep.
Yeah. So I definitely get what you mean there. I feel like I'm stealing all your points, and I'm not. I'm not trying to.
It's all right, when we get to negatives, there's a whole world of problems that I have with this episode. Well, so my turn will come.
I have like no. Yeah, I have like no negatives for this episode, so you can definitely dominate that part for me.
Cracks fingers.
I've been waiting for this my whole life. We're talking about dynamics. And the Doctor and Grant. I love how different each stage felt. So the dynamic between the Doctor and Child Grant, the dynamic between Doctor and Teenage Grant, the dynamic between Doctor and Adult Grant, they all felt different, but they still felt really similar. Like, with the young Grant, it felt like Grant kind of idolized the Doctor as this mysterious person. I mean, he calls him Dr. Mysterio, and at first he thinks he's Santa Claus. So, it had that nice Amy vibe, young Amy vibe to it. But then you have, like, actually, I should point out, I'm surprised it took this long to make a Santa Claus joke in regards to Capaldi's Doctor. I really thought they would have done that sooner.
I have a question regarding that, just, I'm a bit confused. So, the boy said that, now, the parents let the old man, the old guy in, because they thought it was Santa.
Yes.
So, was that like a Nick Frost thing? Because, like, I'm a bit confused about why their parents let anybody, any random old guy, into this house. Whether it was Nick Frost or not, because Nick Frost is terrifying. But I was I might have lost that, because I'm like, what?
Yeah, go for it.
I think the better question you should be asking is, what time of night is it? And I'm going to say he looks about 8 years old and reading comics, so I think that's probably so. 8 to 9 years old. Parent of an 8 to 9 year old kid in New York. I think they're just like, oh, he's dreaming or something. Yeah, that's perfectly fine. Yeah, it's Christmas.
That's what I was getting at.
Okay, good.
I had that mentality. So, the likelihood of an actual person being outside the window is really unlikely.
Good.
So they're like, oh yeah, it's fine, kid. Just open the window and let him in. You know.
I'm really happy I missed that because, well, no, I'm not. I'm happy that what I missed had a really plausible meaning because I was really confused at that point. Anyway.
Yeah. So, Teenage Grant, as I was talking about before, he kind of sees the Doctor as this friend, helping him out while he's trying to struggle between school life and his powers that are developing because of puberty. I thought that was nice.
That puberty scene, though, oh my god. Like, I both love it and hate it for what it did. Like, when he levitated to the end, I'm like, I can't look anymore. But it was definitely and something.
Like, and it's like, you like Lucy, don't you? And like, I was like, I have X-ray vision. I like all of them. And I was like, I think to myself, even the guys?
Of course you'd ask that. Oh my god.
But, also the part where he's like, it's like, Lucy's your favourite, isn't she? And then all of a sudden you see, like, Grant, like, 2 feet in the air, but it's still in the sitting position. That was very funny.
Yep.
Then you have, like, Adult Grant, and there's this kind of, mutual, mature respect between the two now. It's progressed from the young child idolising him to there's this very, mutual respect. And I really like that a lot. Also, in particular to that, I love the idea of, like, seeing the back and forth, or, like, in regards to, like, the shots of when you see the Doctor with young Grant, and it would go back to the Doctor and adult Grant.
I think that was great storytelling, as opposed to, like, for some stupid reason, dumping all the present, like all the past stuff at the start. I think they did it really well then.
Well, that's the thing. It was more effective than what Man of Steel did.
Oh, don't talk about Man of Steel in front of me, please.
Well, oh, this boy. Is a Superman story. It's going to have to be brought up at
some point. Okay, continue.
But yeah, just the dynamic between the two of them. Again, great dialogue between the two. when Grant comments he always gets a cold at Christmas, the Doctor's like, me too, or an invasion. I just, and then, because what happened, right, I watched all the Christmas episodes leading up to it, so it just, I just, for some reason, found that much funnier as a result of just, like, going through all of them, like, yeah, I can see what you mean. Also, and I did not notice this the first time around, when he's explaining this, but when the Doctor says to Mr. Brock that he says, oh, and this is why he didn't have a chance, and he's like, he's actually left-handed, and I didn't realise he was holding it with his right hand the first time around. But I love the fact that he actually was, and they explained that. Because in the child flashbacks, he actually is using his left hand. So I don't know whether that was just inability to find a left-handed actor that looked the part, or he actually just really wanted to make that joke, but I don't know. I liked the joke nonetheless. I'm just going through my points. Set design. Ooh. They did an awesome job of recreating New York, despite not being in New York at all.
That first, like, 10-15 seconds, I already felt like I'm in. Like, he just, the way that they did everything, I already felt like they've successfully, you know, transformed what they... Where was it shot exactly? Like, was it shot in the usual
Bulgaria?
Yeah, all right. But the way they
totally <replaced. laughs>
nickname's always the one to ask. But I cannot agree more on your set design point. It was amazingly done.
Yeah. For majority of this episode, I couldn't get over the fact that one of the main antagonists was Alex Hunter from FIFA 17.
Wait, what?
The one that plays Mr. Brock. He's the one that
right, yeah.
Did the thing for FIFA 17, the journey thing. And I was just like, man, Alex Hunter had a really shit post-soccer life. I just... That was my mentality for, like, 75% of this episode. That wasn't mine,
because I do not play or enjoy FIFA, but, you know... Whatever works.
And you gotta say Alex Hunter.
Alex.
Because it's British.
Hunter.
Hunter. Hunter. You gotta say Alex Hunter.
Ugh, more such, Welsh such than British, to be honest. Alex Hunter.
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 Alex Hunter.
Yeah, that's basically how they, like, how he's always, because the assistant guy, he has that really thick accent, and he's like he's in majority of the,
Yeah.
Of the journey. So that's how you always hear him say his name. And like, yeah, that's sticking with me now. I have a couple more. I liked the Doctor Who explanation of how he achieved his superpowers. It was definitely a nice sci-fi ex machina way of explaining how he got his superpowers. And that was... It was a crystal he ate. He consumed... How do you not know that's not a crystal? How would you think that was a...
Is it just me, or did anyone think it looks like a D20?
Like what?
A D20, like a 20-sided dice, because that reminded me heavily of Futurama, and I started wondering for a second.
I'm just looking at it, I'm like, how could you think, like... Could you imagine him swallowing it and, like, having the really sharp edges and just, like grating down the sides of his throat? Like, he had the water, but that can only do so much.
I don't know. You ever eaten a rock scone? Or whatever, rock cake? I imagine it felt something like that.
But, yeah, as in saying that, like, I like the fact that it was the star that it came from allowed you to get what you want, because he was this big comic book lover. They granted him superpowers, and he named his persona off the name of the crystal. Because all throughout, like, the first 5 minutes of the episode, I'm like, how are they going to explain why he's called the Ghost? Because you always have these origin stories, and they have, like, majority of them make common sense, like Spider-Man, Superman, Batman. But I was like, the Ghost, how do you explain the Ghost? And then when I talked about the crystal, I was like, oh, it's the Ghost of something, like, oh, okay, right, I get it now.
It was a really nice touch.
When he said that the aliens were new, I didn't think he meant Last Christmas New, like Husbands of River Song. Because they did a really good job of hiding that was the alien throughout the Children Need clip. But as soon as he started ripping the side of his head, I'm like, oh, you're talking about that alien. And then he took the gun out of his head. I'm like, right. But it does lead to a funny line where the doctor's like, it's nice to see you keep an open mind. And I was just like, wow. That's a pun I would make.
What
was that?
There's a line from Husbands of River Song. And I think this is actually Peter Capaldi's doing. I don't think Stephen Moffat does this. But Peter Capaldi says to this person after Hydra Flax, the robot, starts breaking down after being touched by the orb. And he's like, sorry, had a bad day on the stock market. And it's sort of like, it's a joke. And he comes back and he's like, sorry, I appreciate that wasn't really funny, but I just had to say it or something. And it's like,
I loved that joke so much in the Husbands. That was actually one of my top three lines from that episode. I don't have the top three in my top of my head, but that was definitely one of the top three I had. So one of the concerns I had was that in the Children in Need clip, when they showed the bit where they're being threatened to get, you know, talking about where they're got their hands in the air and.
Yeah.
They're threatened to be shot in self-defense. And then they had the 12th Doctor's theme play when the ghost shows up. Yep. And a lot of people didn't like that because I'm like, yeah, I can understand why. And then I watched the episode and they changed the music. I thought, I don't know whether this was done afterwards, whether that was done intentionally, but I'm really glad the ghost got his own song choice, because it just didn't make sense to have the ghost have the 12th Doctor's theme. Yeah.
I think I know why that happened, because Children in Need, God, that was a few months back, wasn't it?
About a month, yeah.
Okay. During the months leading up to Season 8, there was a bit of an infamous thing. Some people may not know about it, but the Spanish translation headquarters for the BBC had a leak.
Ah, yes.
And some of the beta episodes for Doctor Who got leaked, and I was privileged enough to view one of these, and they used placeholder music quite often, and so in the unfinished episode there were various bits of music. In fact, I'm nearly convinced that one of them was riffing from The Dark Knight, as in the Batman series, so I'm sort of like, what's going on there? But yeah, they're using that because the score isn't quite finished. A month difference between Children in Need and the episode, I'd say probably...
I think it was November, yeah.
Yeah, probably wouldn't have been the placeholder music, but it's entirely possible that there are a bunch of changes made up and lost in the editing room at last minute.
Yeah, I totally get that, but it was relief. I was just relieved that they did give the ghost his own music. I was like, okay, good job.
Yeah.
But speaking of like music like that, there wasn't actually a commercialized song used in the episode. And that amazed me, because I'm like, because you know how Murray Gold tends to do a lot of the audio, like a lot of the music throughout the episode. So when you hear, like, in this case it was Primal Screams Loaded, and to give you an idea of when this happened, this was when we flashed back to Teenage Grant, and that music started playing in the background. The ba-na-ba-na-ba-ba-ba-ba. That one, that part.
Yep, yep.
Yeah. And the only reason I recognise that is because it's the intro music to The World's End. That's the only reason why I knew it was commercialised. And I was just like, I recognise that song, and that is definitely not Murray Gold. And then I looked it up and, yeah, they used that song. I'm like, nailed it. So yeah, that was just a really nice touch there. Just to nearly slip that by me the first time around, but I got it. When the Doctor says to Mr. Brock, right, you're not the only one who's full of it, is that the closest to swearing that the Doctor has ever been?
Yeah.
Because he's obviously implying he's full of shit, right? But he never says it. And I was like, I think that's the closest to swearing you've gotten, but I'm not quite sure. Because Clara said ass, Missy said bitch, but I don't think the Doctor's ever reached that swearing stage yet. The implication there is definitely... It's definitely a no-no for children's television.
Oh, which episode was it? I'm thinking of the... What's the name of the Cyberman episode from Season 7B? Silver.
Diamond and Silver.
Yeah. There's a segment where Matt Smith's Doctor is blindfolded and he's playing with Clara's... student kids. She's a tutor for them.
Oh, no, that was Name of the Doctor. That was Name of the Doctor. And you're talking about the little Daleks.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about? Yeah, that's Name of the Doctor. Yeah.
But yeah, that's probably as close to what Matt Smith has gotten. I don't think in recent Who has he ever gotten close to swearing.
Yeah, I think that's the closest they've gotten. But we'll see. We'll see Series 10. You know, maybe you'll drop an F-bomb, you know?
Good old Matt.
Just when he regenerates it. Just when he regenerates, he's like, fuck.
Fuckity bye.
And then he blows up, like... It's like, what a send-off.
That'd be great.
Alright, I got a couple more. Osgood. She got a name drop.
Yeah.
At the end of the episode by Unit Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, one of the other unit soldiers had the alien thing done to him. Mm. So, what we can establish is that, yeah, we're definitely not seeing the last of those aliens. I don't know whether that'll be Series 10, maybe the Christmas special, but I get the feeling Moffat's going to do one last episode with these characters, like with the enemies, because I don't know if Chibnall will use them. Or maybe they'll leave it open-ended, I don't know. But they've got to explain... There's definitely going to be a story where Unit's invaded by those aliens. Possible foreshadowing for Series 10 there. My favourite character of this entire episode is Mr. Huffle.
Yep.
Without a doubt, Mr. Huffle.
I can't believe we haven't mentioned Mr. Huffle yet. Oh, my Lord.
Which is like... when the Doctor's getting uncomfortable at his screams of pain. It's just so glorious. I really want to miss the Huffle doll now and just irritate the shit out of my parents. Just everything about Mr. Huffle is just so funny. Just the ridiculous face with like the really big poofy black hair on the top, and I don't know, there's just something really charming about Mr. Huffle. And I hope we see more of him in Series 10 now that he's actually in the TARDIS. Mr. Huffle and Nardole in the TARDIS. Next stop, everywhere.
Don't forget Billy. Billy's coming along.
Can't forget Billy. And we'll talk about the Series 10 things shortly. The last thing I really want to say, the very powerful speech at the end of the episode, that was definitely one that stood out to me. The bunny's like, things end, that's all. Everything ends, and it's always sad, but everything begins again too. And that's always happy. Be happy. Like, his delivery straight away was brilliant. But I liked, because at first it felt like it related back to Riversong, and how she's like, everything ends. But at the same time, it also felt like Moffat was addressing the audience directly. You know, like RTD did with I Don't Want to Go, but instead it's Moffat's thing, and I thought that was a very nice poetic way to sum up his tenure as a writer. What did you guys think of that line?
Yeah, that's my response.
I've got some issues with Moffat's writing over the years, but for that sort of line, I do reckon that it has a sort of beautiful levity, and I agree, yeah, it does sort of summarise his sentiments, or I imagine it would in some capacity, for his running of the show, because he's, what, Six years.
Yes. 2010 to 20. Actually, it'd be 2010 to 2017. Seven years. Wow.
He can't say goodbye, which I don't blame him. But, you know.
He always says that.
Also. Nice Day of the Doctor reference there.
Thank you.
Also, the Doctor, now it's a new costume. The black thin jacket, and he's like... his shirt's like almost completely unbuttoned. And he's just... He just exuded awesomeness with that new costume. And he's a really aggressive stare. Like, he's like trying to get over River Song. And he's just like really pissed off.
That River Song part, like, broke my heart, man. I couldn't... When they brought that up, I was like just sitting there just staring without saying a single word. I was like, no, why must you remind me of that? Oh, but it was a great part, I think. Anyway, sorry for interruption.
That's all the positives I have. I think I took majority of you guys. Is there any other positives you had that hasn't been mentioned already?
Well, Ringo's making up his mind. I loved his combination of the velvet coat and hoodie right at the start of the episode. That was
really nice.
If I'm gonna ever become a doctor, I want it.
That's it for me for positives as well. So,
I totally forgot. I made a list of all the superhero references I found in the episode, and there are a lot. Amazingly, you guys have okay with me going through them all?
Sure,
go for it.
Alright, so I mentioned the Ang Lee Hulk comic book style thing much earlier. But, okay, so in the beginning we have a pan up from a New York sewer to a pizza shop. Gee, I wonder what that could be referencing. I was surprised to see a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles reference in there. That was a really, really nice touch. In Child Grant's room there was a Captain America clock, a Defenders poster on the wall, on the back of the door there was a poster of Silver Surfer, Wolverine, Spider-Man, Captain America, and I think Iron Man, but it was trying to get frame shots, and it was hard to tell, but I think it was Iron Man. You guys mentioned before that he flicked through a Superman comic, commenting that Superman Clark Kent were the same person. Would you consider that foreshadowing? I guess you could.
We're not going into negatives just yet, but I don't think it was subtle enough to be foreshadowing.
Okay, fair enough. When climbing up to the roof, you guys were talking about this before with Spider-Man. I just love the cop. He's like, when Grant asks what do you think happened after being bitten, he's like, he got radiation poisoning. Just that's a very funny. You're talking about superhero sins. That was definitely one of the big ones there. I like the fact that the two protagonists, Grant Gordon and Lucy Lombard, both have alliterative names. That's a very comic book type thing where they would have first name and last name being the same initial. Even the Doctor got an alias that was alliterative. He called himself Dan Dangerous from Scotland Yard. That took two watches to get that one. Obviously, you have the rotating globe and Harmony Shoal representing the Daily Planet, where Superman and Clark and Lois work at. Grant's costume has a giant G on the front, like Superman with the S. There's a really subtle line when the ghost comments to Lucy that he hopes the unpleasant experience hasn't put you off your career in journalism. That was a nice reference to the Superman movie where Superman says to Lois that he hopes this hasn't put you off flying. That was a really nice moment. Lucy mistakes the ghost's baby buzzer for the back signal. It's like does the bat still come in an app now? And then, like, moments later, she says, when the ghost flies away, to go get him, which basically reminded me of Spider-Man 2, when Mary Jane said, go get him, Tiger. When Grant changes back into regular clothes, he twirls around like Wonder Woman does. When Grant notices the baby's missing, the Doctor says, with great power comes great responsibility, the famous Uncle Ben to Peter Parker line. Grant ripped open his shirt to reveal the ghost costume in the same way that Clark Kent did. The scene with the ghost loosing on the rooftop is a direct reference to the rooftop scene in the original Superman movie. And that's all I got. As you can tell, there was definitely a lot of references to Superman in the episode, as well as a bunch of others.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we've talked positives. Go for the negatives. Go for it, Connor. Go for the negatives.
Oh, give all you got, Connor.
Boy, this episode was bad. Okay. We all agree that the story wasn't great, but the interweaving of it, there was a real lack of focus, and that's what bugs me. This is the big broad negative, is that you have the Doctor and Nardole, the Doctor recovering from River Song. That could be, like, maybe addressed a little bit more subtly, but you have the aliens, which are right brand new, and they were in the last episode, and people are so sort of attracted by them. Like, personally, I love them. I think they're great. As the primary antagonist for second episode, after just being introduced, particularly a year ago, it feels weird.
Yep.
It feels like it was just a monster of the week. Oh, I've got to come up with this Christmas episode thing. Whack-a-me. The characters Lucy and Grant, you talk about how they were really fleshed out. In my opinion, it's not hard to flesh out a cardboard cutout. These are really, really short characters. They're not meant to have any longevity. In fact, I got rather annoyed, because, I mean, the point was to draw parallel with Superman and sort of all the superhero genres. But to me, if you're drawing so heavily on something, it's laziness. It's not being ingenious. Like, with the, going back to the aliens, in the previous episode when I saw them, I'm like, holy shit. They are unlocking a vault from their head. That's cool. That's genius. I love it. A superhero who, A, does everything Superman does except for heat vision, I think. Like, everything else, frost breath as well, but has, like, the majority of the usual superpowers, is riffing off his design, is basically the same story. Really, really bad, really clumsy, really lazy. The resolution, which has always been a problem, in my opinion, with Stephen Moffat's writing, is that it bundled up. It's just sort of, he builds these great threads, and when it works out, it can be amazing, it can be fantastic. That's why I love Blink, that's why I love, for one of the more recent ones, Heaven Sent, which is, it's a masterpiece, I love it.
Yep.
Here, he's not given enough time, or he's not given enough focus to make the threads work. You've got one which is way overdeveloped, which is Grant's sort of at-home persona and him struggling with that while the Doctor's like, I can quite obviously see what's going on. And then you've got the major arcing story of people invading. Like, that somehow takes a lower role in the story, which doesn't make sense to me. If you're having an invasion, why is that the next role? If you're going to make it about the characters, make it about the characters. Don't add that sort of unnecessary backfill. That's just packing in too much, and like I said, making the ending really shitty, because he just ends up saving the day, and it's like, boom, done. I'm personally not a fan of adding children in to Doctor Who, because sometimes they can be really annoying, and they don't need to be. What's The Forest of the Night? Or The Forest in the Night?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we try to forget that episode.
We really do.
So, that's probably the worst case example, is having children, which, I mean, the actors are young, and if you're not so sure what kind of character you're trying to play, then you're just trying to read lines, and you're not going to necessarily add that much to the show. Those characters were annoying. Young Grant was really annoying and kind of bratty, in my opinion. Again, I'm taking an extremely pessimistic look at the show, but I've had problems with Stephen Moffat for a long time. I'm a very passionate RTD boy, and I'm very much like, because I take offense at some of the things he said in interviews before. Like, he's... this is taking a pick at Moffat personally, but in an interview for one of the classic episodes about the writers, Stephen Moffat didn't discuss the episode. He's just like, I don't really like the writer. And that's it. And it's like, yeah, that pisses me off.
Do you remember the episode?
It was... I think it was either a Peter Davison or a John Pertwee era, so it's somewhere there, but it, I watched it years ago.
If you can find the link, I'd love to read it, see what you're talking about.
I had another point I was going to make. Another point. Oh, yeah. The line that Lucy says at the start, which makes me think there was more to the story that they cut away and didn't either trim necessarily or didn't leave enough in to sort of quench my thirst, was that I'm Lucy so-and-so from the Daily Planet copycat thing. And she's like, hang on, why am I telling you all this? To me, that signifies Truthfield, but they didn't specify, or not that I can remember, and they left that hanging there, so there was more to the story, and when you pack too much in...
Well, I don't think that was necessarily Truthfield, though. I mean, you had, was it The Lodger, where he basically was telling him everything, and that wasn't a Truthfield by any means?
Was that James Corbin's character, or Matt Smith's character saying
yes.
that? James Corbin.
That was James Corden.
Oh, okay, so
when he's cooking the food, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Why am I telling you all this? Just,
yeah.
But yeah, maybe that's just the doctor. But yeah, I felt like this episode was a bit of a waste considering it's one of Moffat's last. So I don't know. Maybe consider returning to the world he found himself in when he was writing Heaven Sent and Blink and sort of going on from that to write a script. You guys. back to you guys.
I feel like with any like writer when you write a lot of episodes, you're gonna have your bad ones. You're gonna have your really mediocre ones, you're gonna have the good ones, and then you're gonna have that lightning in a bottle. And that's only going to happen probably, I don't know, once every two seasons if you're lucky. That lightning in a bottle. Like, ITD, he had in Series 4 with Turn Left and Midnight. In, like, two consecutive, like, ones.
That were filmed at the same time as well. Like, what the hell? Brilliant.
And then you'd have, like, a bit of time, and then Waters of Mars. Another bright spark. And then you'd have Steve Moffat. He'd have, like, 11th Hour.
Oh, yeah, that was a great episode.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's like, you're gonna have your...
Yeah.
You're gonna have your really shitty ones, but if it means having the really great ones, I don't mind having to put through, like, one episode of mediocrity, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because at least you're like, I know this guy can write. As like, and it will happen. It's just you just gotta find the right story.
Yeah, I just feel a little disappointed in coming off season 9, and I know the whole point of Doctor Who is to never compare episodes because they're stories in a whole universe. So
we're gonna do that next year. We're gonna compare episodes. It's gonna be nothing new there.
Gonna be like Sleep No More sequel. What an amazing episode! But the original. Trash. Yeah.
It's good. It's good. It doesn't have that much that low. Like the standards for that, it can be really low anyway. To try and improve on the predecessor of Sleep No More, so. I guess we'll see what happens in Series 11, more than likely.
Yep.
For me, there was apart from what you're talking about with regards to the story, there were probably two big negatives I had. I was talking about before about how I loved the majority of the dialogue, but there were two really, really awkward bits of dialogue that just it got on my nerve for different reasons. So the first one's when Nardole asks Brock where the little boy's room is.
Oh my god!
I cringed really hard, and it's like, I think you'll find the restroom that way. And I was like, no, I'm after the little boy's room. Like, just make this dialogue end, please. Just make this dialogue and move on. So that was the one that was one awkward line, and the other one was when Lucy says that she likes Grant in his superhero costume, and all she does is put his glasses on. I was confused. I'm like, wait, so what are you suggesting? Are you suggesting that his everyday job is his superhero thing, and his super? I didn't quite understand the metaphor that they were going for towards the end there. Maybe that's just me not fully understanding it, but it just came across as confusing to me. I know, Ringo, that you mentioned that there was an awkward bit of dialogue that you didn't like.
That was that one, yep.
Which one was it?
The boys' room. Yep. At that point, yeah. I wanted to backtrack to the... when we first saw the doctor hanging from the rope, I wanted to put Nardole there. Just for that, just for that dialogue alone.
Without the sonic screwdriver. Or the kid. go for it.
I have one negative. And I know that a lot of people disagree with this, and that's fine, but this is my opinion. I didn't find the villain, their plans, their goals, just them in general, interesting enough for me to care, honestly. Obviously, so it wasn't that good. But I was just constantly looking back at the season one Slitheen double. That entire time.
That was my other point. Yeah. That I was going to get to.
I tried not to, but I just couldn't stop. You know, with the head and the politicians and everything, I just like, oh my god, it's so similar. And while that's not a bad thing, it's still story, it didn't make them interesting to me. And that's my main negative with this episode.
Yeah, I had the same point. It's just the main plan by the aliens. It just wasn't original, and that disappointed me because it's just they would cause an alien ship to crash. So. They had the real aliens there already, and then they're going to cause mass panic so they can get what they want. It was done. But as saying that, and this is kind of a half point, I feel like I liked it in this episode just a little bit more, simply because I hated the approach they took with Savine, that I just could not take their plan seriously at all.
Because they thought it so much, or?
The fighting didn't help. Let's put it that way. The fighting didn't help. But it was just everything surrounding the Savine's approach to it. Like, it felt... The problem I have with that episode is that there's this really weird change in tone. You'd have the really goofy Savine, but you have this really serious plot, I suppose. And they just didn't go work well together. Whereas in this episode, I feel like because the aliens weren't as ridiculous and you were supposed to take them a little bit more seriously, you felt the plan was a bit more believable in their case. Mm-hmm. That's why I say it's kind of a half negative. I'm going to take points off because you're ripping off Aliens in London, but at the same time I really can't hate it that much because I feel like I enjoyed it a bit more here in this case. So yeah, that's my conflicting final point.
I actually had one more bit of dialogue which I understand why it was there, but I still cringe at it. When Grant is on the TV talking about the fire, and he's like, so get a smoke detector. And I'm like, I dropped my headset, walked out, took a breather, and came back. It was just so cringe. And for me personally, I just couldn't handle why his expression, the line, everything about that. Anyway, not a negative per se, but just a line that I just couldn't get over. Anyway.
It was a cringy line, but I definitely found that line funny.
Oh, it was hilarious. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Not like the Nardole introduction, which was not funny, just cringe. Like.
Yeah.
Anyway. Alright, that's it for me, personally.
Alright. Let's talk about the brief Series 10 teaser trailer. What did you guys think of it?
Maringa?
Connor, do you want to... Alright. I'm skeptical. Like, I thought it was... There were things to like and things to not like, but...
Yeah.
Let's just say for some people, I still have hope. For some people, You could have loved Bill at the start and hated Bill after like 10 seconds into this, because just the constant, you know, the questions is fine, but it felt a bit annoying whilst I was watching this. But you know, putting that aside, I'm still excited. I think the things we were shown were pretty decent. I should have rewatched it just before this because I forgot a little bit of stuff. But you know, the Bill thing, I'm most skeptical about the most, but I'm still not giving up. I mean, she reminds me a lot of Donna, which is one of my favorite companions. So I'm not going to be I'm not going to lose hope on her yet. But that's most of my points there. Connor, what do you think?
I'm really keen on Billy as a companion. In the short preview thing we got a few months back, where she was like,
"Oh yeah,
I think
that was good though. I enjoyed that."
That's the thing. That's the thing. I liked that bit of that intro bit to Bill more than I did this trailer.
Mm.
I just feel like, yeah. But anyway, keep going.
It's because I think the reason why you might not like it is because it's done as the preface. It's like in season 6 when Amy Palmer's like, "I had an imaginary friend. When I grew up, he came back." It's like, that's sort of telling the story of what's sort of happening. But in the thing a few months back, I just liked her sort of nervous humor. And I liked how she was asking these questions, because I mentioned earlier that the companion is the way you see the doctor. You know, you see through their eyes as opposed to the doctor's. And it's been... How long has it been? It's been 3 years since we've had a new companion. And technically, even then, it was a few years before that. But to see this new lens and everything, this new take... And I liked how, you know... the witty banter of just like, why do they say exterminate? And it's like, it's a thing, they just say exterminate. It's like, shouldn't they just say kill? Mm-hmm. Like they could say it faster. It's like, do you really want them to save time? And it's that kind of dialogue, you know, where
yeah,
they're not so much having the thrill of the chase, but it's just spontaneous. It's, you know, coming out of the moment, and it feels really good. I think Pearl Mackie's doing a brilliant job so far. As for the trailer at the moment, a little bit ham-fisted with the dialogue, but it looks promising. And I'm hoping that the next trailers to follow will reveal more that we all enjoy.
Yeah. You were basically spot on. For me, the worst part about it was just the narration. It was just so off-putting. Like, it felt like, yeah, it almost felt like you were talking to a child, but not in a good way.
Mm.
Like, oh, I'm Bill. I serve chips. He's the professor. You know, it's just, it feels condescending. I know it's not what we're trying to get at, but to me, I was just like, I'm not liking how you're talking to me right now. But there were a couple of things that I did take away from that trailer. She referred to the doctor as the professor, as I mentioned there, and that's reminded me very much of Ace, because I know that Ace called the doctor the professor quite a lot. Also, from what I understand, he's a university lecturer in the first episode, based on the shot looked like he was out in front of a university, and that would make sense as to why those two would meet up. We got another Dr. Watt. I thought we were over the Dr. Watt. You had Rose saying it in Rose. I'm sure it's been said twice since then. Can we get over the Dr. Watt as a way to avoid saying Doctor Who?
I think it's, please? I think it's a mark of colloquialism. And I'm quite fond of it, because it's like Dr. Watt, like, you don't say who is your name, you say what is your name. So, it's like referring to an object as opposed to the person, so. A little nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that, but at the same time, it's yeah, I don't know. Also, the weird comment by Bill asking if, like, well, she says that the TARDIS interior is like a kitchen. First of all, how? I don't understand how you could think the interior of a TARDIS looks like a kitchen. But it reminded me of when Clara asks if there's a kitchen in the TARDIS in the Snowman. Now, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but I just know that's a thing I noticed.
I reckon it's because it's steel and steamy and everything.
I just don't see how it looks like a kitchen, and I'm just like, what are you talking about?
I don't know.
Also, when she's like, can I use the toilet? I'm like, why is that a bit of dialogue you'd want to show in the trailer for? It serves no purpose to establishing this character in the trailer at all. So I was like, that felt a bit pointless. Mm. There were some very nice visual landscapes that they showed off in the trailer, like the city that has that giant cornfield that they walk towards. I think it was a cornfield. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yep. I believe so.
Yeah.
That's not a cornfield, but it looks like a cornfield, so I just said it as a cornfield. I think it looks like snowy Victorian London.
Whoops.
Again, I don't know how to feel about that, because... again, Victorian London, because that's never been done before. But with snow, yeah. We've never had Victorian London with snow. at all. The Doctor was in a really awesome suit, though, when he's in Victorian London. And we saw that in the shots that they had. But I just love the suit and the big giant top hat. I love that. Also, there was a bit where they're walking through, like, this hallway. And they looked to be, like, what looked like pods. And I don't know if that's a Cybermen episode, but it looks like it. Particularly because they have that yellow glowing circle in all the pods.
Mm.
So I'm like, is that a Cybermen episode? I don't know. But it would be nice to see how that relates. Because it can't be Death in Heaven Cybermen. It might be Nightmare in Silver Cybermen. But again, I don't know. I don't know. It's just... thoughts. The emoji bots. We saw that for like a second. God, they looked awful. They looked like the hand bots from The Girl Who Waited, but without any of the personality of the hand bots in The Girl Who Waited. I know it's like a 3 second short thing that we saw of them, but I know I'm not gonna like you. you're gonna have to do a lot to convince me there. Also, Daleks. And this makes me think the thing you were talking about beforehand, the introduction trailer for Bill, actually will be an episode we'll see in Series 10. Because it looked, a lot of the shots they'd used in that trailer looked very similar to the ones that were in the Series 10 trailer.
Yeah.
Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I don't think they were going to waste that. Again, I don't think they were going to waste such good dialogue just on an introduction trailer.
Yeah. I hope it's not episode 2, though, because I would like to see it like a little bit more of a wait time between Into the Dalek and... Oh, sorry, not Into the Dalek. Magician's Apprentice and when they choose to do that episode. I hope there's a bit of a gap. Also, Sonic sunglasses are back. I looked at them like, they're back, yes! I know a lot of people were so divisive with those Sonic sunglasses. But I was really happy to see them. Like, yeah, they're super poly. Just keep them.
I originally hated the use of them. I thought they were a really sort of lazy way to design a new device because it's effectively Ray-Bans with Sonic sound put on when he presses a button. But even then, the sound's dubbed in, so they're just Ray-Bans. But yeah, after repeated viewings of Season 9... I really come to love the use of them and how they're much more, or much less in your face. They're much more, they're on his face, actually. And they're sort of part of the scene as opposed to the focus of a shot.
And also the tagline, see the universe anew. I love that tagline.
Yep.
It definitely screamed out, this is a breath of fresh air for Doctor Who, and I hope that it is. I really do. Because when you introduce a new companion in, you want it to make it to feel like... Not that it's not like a new show, but at the same time, you want it to to feel different to past seasons, in a way. So that tagline gave me somewhat of an optimism. Any other thoughts in regards to the Series 10 teaser trailer?
Are we going to see David Tennant?
I don't think for another... Hang on, what year is it? 2016, 2017? I wouldn't say for another 6 years, possibly. When 60th anniversary comes around.
True.
You're young enough, you'll be around then to experience that.
That concludes part one of our conversation. The entire conversation was too long, we deemed, to fit onto one entire episode, so we've separated them into two. So the second half of this conversation looks at the top 10 superhero movies between 2000 and 2016. Do check that out, as the results will probably surprise you. Alright, till then, I'm out.